Welcome to The Rabbi and the Shrink. This is Dr. Margarita Gurry, Dr. Red Shoe, and my favorite rabbi,
Jonas Ingoldson.
The good rabbi and I are very proud today. We're going to be talking to Danny Chandler. Hi, Danny.
Hello.
Hello, Danny.
Danny is an odd bird because I've known her for a long time. I met her when I was in South Florida in Miami area. And I was very impressed with her understanding of what it takes to be financially healthy as an individual, as a family, as a corporation. She does a variety of things. And so she's going to help us. We know that it's January and everyone's got their New Year's resolutions. And she's going to help us with these last few days of January, start those resolutions off with a bang. So, Danny, what is it that you think we need to do to make sure we're financially fit?
So thank you for the introduction. It's my pleasure and honor to be here. And I love to share messages. That's really, you know, the learning that I've done over the years in training and development and working with people, philanthropists, and helping them direct their charitable giving. As I was on the executive team of a very large organization. And I learned how money changes the way we think and the way we feel. And research really today is uncovering how wealth and the lack of really impacts a sense of morality.
How so?
And our relationships with others, as well as our mental health.
So let's say I'm wealthy or I'm not. What's the impact I can expect?
Well, so that's a very broad question.
Yes, thank you.
And how what I do is I work from where people are now. So if I'm working with someone who is a certain, bringing in a certain income, or they're retired, or they're in their 20s, or they're in their 30s, there's different needs depending on the person's age, depending on, you know, their responsibilities. I have three young children. My daughter is now 18. My other daughter's turning 18. And years ago, when they were little, I planned for their future in terms of their being able to build financial security in a plan. So some people have the benefit of starting early because of the work and my career change that I made over 10 years ago. I now, that's front and center for me. As a woman, it was never something that I paid attention to. Right? It was something my husband handled. And then, there but for the grace of God, I got into this field. I was recruited into it. I had three young children, so I made a career change, which is the best thing I ever did because it allowed me to be with my children as well as to be able to have a profession that I love. And now I'm the person who leads the financial planning with my husband. So it's really, Dr. Red Shoe, you're amazing. And it really depends on where each person is coming from. So everything that I do is really based on what the person has. We look at where they are and we look at where they want to be. And then we look at what you have to do to get there, right? As a psychologist, you know that that's the way things go. It's a planning process.
So
let's talk about some of the ethical reasons why. And we could say as women, but really as any member of society, I focus a lot with women and business owners. So we need to plan for our businesses, because what happens if somebody dies? What happens if it's a partnership and one of the partners dies? What happens to that stake in that business?
And when you talk about ethics in planning, it's anticipating things that might happen, as opposed to simply planning for the things that you want to happen, and preparing ourselves that if certain contingencies come about, we've already thought them through set in place a mechanism that will provide the best possible outcome for everybody involved.
Yes. Yes.
So, and I want to go back to one of the first statements you meant. You said that wealth impacts us. So forgetting just business, you know, money is something people love to hate, or they love to love, or they, it's too big a deal or not enough of a deal. I mean, we have interesting relationships with money. So the idea of wealth or lack of wealth impacting us, by now you've had lots of experience. You've been a financial advisor. You have a degree in psychology and social work. And you have a long history of long-term care insurance support. So how does wealth or lack of it impact us? I want the basic overarching question.
Well, some people don't, they don't budget. It's very basic. Budgeting is really 101. And we help our clients budget. Budgeting is really important because if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there, right, Rabbi? Right? So there are risks that challenge financial security.
Let me ask you something, Danny.
Yes, please, Rabbi.
Rather than getting into, you know, the very specifics of financial planning, we'd like you to help us see the type of, you know, how do you develop a mindset? You know, is what type of perception or attitude should we have that will inform us in how we see money as a tool to benefit us and others, as opposed to something that's really the driving force in our lives? Is that something you could speak to?
So I want to make sure I understand your question. So can you repeat it, Rabbi?
Let me put it, frame it this way, perhaps. That, you know, Simon Sinek is famous for, it's not his idea, but the find your why, what motivates us. And I want to make money is not the motivation that really should be driving any of us. It doesn't mean we don't want to make money, but we need a higher purpose in life. We need something that really defines us. Why are we here? Why are we doing what we're doing? So to see money as a tool as opposed to a goal.
Got it. So what kind of mindset do we need to have for that? You know, it's interesting. I just came back from Israel. And I had a very spiritual experience there. My daughter's learning there now. My daughter's 18 and she's at an excellent, excellent seminary.
I can't believe she's 18 already. Wow.
Yeah, she is. And I have one that's almost 18 also. Anyway, I'm going to be going back there. But what happened to me on this journey, and I've spent time in Israel, I led missions to Israel. I was there during 9/11 in Israel, meeting with soldiers, asking them what it was like to live with terrorism as the towers were hit in the middle of the JCC when we were having our meeting. So I've had enough experience with Israel. I don't speak the language. My husband is fluent. He's always wanted to live there. I got a real sense of purpose and meaning there. And not to romanticize it and not to talk about Israel, the point is money is a reality. And so my husband and I haven't been able to do it, because how do you live in Israel and you can't earn a living? And if your living is here in the States, how do you do that? So we're engaged in this discussion now. And the mindset is priorities. I spent all my time here running to malls, shopping for my kids, doing this. It's not like you don't do that there. But what I'm trying to say is I want to be able to have money enough to be able to live where I want to live and live the life that I want to live. I've been spending a lot of years personally working, and I have three young kids. And I am, my husband and I are now talking about what's important to me, to us as parents. So, but the money is the tool, as you say. Does that answer your question?
No, not for me.
Go ahead. Okay, so ask it another way then.
Well, I'm going to ask it to you. So I work with people who struggle with even wanting to do their taxes or wanting to know where they are. Like you and your husband are comfortable in that world. And you, for those that aren't comfortable, what is the mindset that helps them come to their desks or a sitting arrangement with somebody or even themselves to think and think about money and how they can use their ideas to create impact in their lives that's more to what they want?
Thank you. And I really appreciate you clarifying and asking it in another way. So it's really being open. It's having a facilitator who will just listen and help guide. Okay. Before I do anything regarding
so before they have to want to have a facilitator. I want you to
but
be
they
more
don't brief. Even know, but doctor, they don't even know what they don't know.
Okay, so let's say they're not ready to even have a guide. What can you do to help our listeners get to the point where they might call a guide or might go down the path that's more practical? What mindset can you offer them that gets them excited about being on good terms with money?
Trust
of what?
Conversation. Like my whole thing, what I do every day is I educate.
Okay, I'm not making myself clear. Rabbi, I'm doing a terrible job of reaching her. I don't want someone to have a conversation with you or anyone else. What can they do for themselves, their mindset, a personal one-on-one mindset, to get to the point where they can then do the secondary issues of find someone they can trust and whatever? What are the thoughts they can do so they can stop struggling with and avoiding money? I think that you're so sophisticated, you're not understanding the basic struggle that I'm seeing.
Well, I live that struggle every day because out of many people that I talk to, they're not ready to have the discussion.
Okay,
so I
good.
Understand.
So what can you do to help us with the mindset to get ready to dive into money as a friend?
Education, being open to being educated, just listening, 15 minutes of a conversation
with
somebody.
Other people, though, what thoughts can they have? What questions can they ask to get themselves before they interact with anyone else, whether it's on a YouTube channel?
Well,
or
it's, yeah, I mean, it's about looking at spending patterns.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And what else?
It's about looking at savings. It's conversations and communication with their loved ones.
Okay.
Children never understand anything about money and planning because parents don't talk to them about it.
Okay. So we need to talk to kids.
My kids hear it vicariously through me because they listen to my work all day. So
yeah,
I'm sure it's annoying after a while. And it's really about a couple. That's why I'm hesitant when I get into specific because people, not everybody has a partner, but it's really about being able to be open and trusting and doing it in conjunction with your partner. If you have a partner, if you don't have a partner, but let's say someone has children, but doesn't have a partner. It's really about having ethical discussions with your family. You know, and it really is based on where you are. I'm at a point now and I'm going to be getting ready for retirement. I'm going to work through retirement because this work I could do, but I have to talk to my husband to be able to be open. What does that look like? How many more years are we going to work? What is that retirement age? So people who are resistant, they got to be open. That's the mindset. I don't know how else to say it. The way that I help people become open is I share my hopes, my strengths, my ideas. I share my stories. We have my husband's family. There's Alzheimer's in his family. You bet that they were grateful for their long-term care. My mom, who passed away, she signed away her long-term care. My brother was on her floor helping bathe her. Okay. It's these stories, doctor. And that's why, you know, it's not just like a one word answer. It's really about sharing stories.
Okay.
You know, I think that you made a point earlier when you were talking about how your relationship, your financial relationship or roles with your husband has changed over time.
Yes.
And, you know, that's something that my wife and I also have experienced, that flexibility to recognize that life does change as we go along. And that when we look back and we see how we've dealt with various expected or unexpected changes in our lives, how much better if we can benefit from the experience of others and look ahead so that it's less likely that we'll get caught off guard and we'll be prepared for those situations.
Rabbi, thank you for sharing that. Can I ask a question to you, Rabbi, about what you saw as a shift in your own relationship regarding talking about money, planning for? Can I ask how just to give me an example so that would help inform our discussion?
Yeah, my wife and I live in St. Louis. We've lived here for 27, 28 years. And when we moved here, we had four children, five and under. And my wife said, I don't really want to work right now. Very reasonable. I mean, she was working. She was working a lot harder than I was. She didn't want a job on top of that. And so we found a way to be able to get by on my income. After a couple of years, the kids were all in school and she was ready to go back to work. We were both teaching in private schools. Now, there's a lot that's nice about private schools, but financially, there's no tenure, there's no retirement. And this was something that my wife, being much more practical minded than I am, she saw this as a cause for concern. She found a field, she went into special ed. She's been teaching in public school. Missouri, where we live, has the best retirement plan for teachers in the country.
Great.
Excellent.
And so, you know, we have a lot more reason to feel secure than many people we know.
Well, it sounds,
They've been they've been following their passion, they've been following their ideals, but they don't have a solid foundation for when retirement comes.
It also sounds like, back to the question, communication.
Yes.
Which we addressed, and I mentioned it earlier. It sounds like you, Rabbi Goldson, that you and your wife was able to prioritize by saying, I don't want two jobs, I'm gonna have one. I'm a type A personality, so I never give up my day jobs. So I have three jobs, basically. So I think it's great. The first thing is communication and a willingness to let go. And you know what I think's underlying in that too? In my own relationship, I grew up with a lot of financial insecurity. And thank God today I don't have that. And because we plan.
We're going to go to the word of the day. When we come back, we'll ask you about what's your next adventure and some final words or call to action for the listeners. Rabbi, word of the day, sir.
Word of the day. Well, you know, one of the reasons why we have to have these kinds of conversations is because most of us like to kick the can down the road. I'll start planning later. And that's because we are pain averse. Thinking about the future and thinking about possibilities and thinking about what could go wrong, what I have to plan for, and how much do I have to spend to prepare for the future. You know, these are all things we would rather not do. And so the word of the day addresses this. It's actually a word you may be familiar with, doctor, because it's from psychology. It's called akmesthesia.
Nope, didn't know it.
I have to write that down.
Akathisia. It means the awareness of sharp points through the sense of touch without experiencing pain.
Wow.
And I think it's a really useful mindset, because one of the words we've had in the past is compartmentalize. You know, this is a form of compartmentalization. I'm aware that there's something painful, but I'm not actually experiencing the pain. I actually had this myself during once when I was under anesthesia, and I woke up during my surgery, and I knew I was in pain, but it didn't bother me. And so we need to know where these sharp points are. We need to know where the pain points are. And yet, there's a way that we can somehow divorce ourselves from the pain. And in this sense, when we start saying, well, I have to spend money, and I have to take out policies, and I have to think about contingencies, I'm going to have to sacrifice for the future. And if we think about it that way, then we're in trouble. If we think of it instead as I'm investing in my future, well, investment doesn't sound nearly so painful or so daunting as sacrifice. Sacrifice means I'm giving something up. Investment means I'm putting something away for the future. It's still for me, and it's going to come back. I'm going to reap more than I sow. And so to know where the pain points are, but to reframe the experience so that they aren't really painful. This is how we can be responsible, which of course is fundamental to being ethical. And we can protect ourselves and the people we care about as we look towards the future.
Great word, Rabbi. Thank you. That's wonderful. So Danny, you inspired this word. That was lovely. What is the next adventure you're looking forward to? And we'd like to think of a not just a work adventure, but any adventure in your life you're looking forward to.
I want to spend some time in Israel working on my spirituality.
Okay.
And that'd continue be nice. Continue the spiritual work that I do with people every day and having conversations. I want to do those two things, and I want to strengthen my own connection with my higher power, which is...
We could support you in that.
I love that, Rabbi. I really do. I'm so glad I got to meet you today.
I'm glad you two got to meet too.
Thank you for making it happen.
Oh, my pleasure. So final words for our listening audience?
From me or?
Yes, from you. Danny. From you, Danny.
You get the last word.
I really love being able to share strength and hope. And I really appreciate the time. And I am here to have any kind of conversation that anybody would like to have on the basics, the ethics, just even just to get started. I am available to talk to anybody without any expectations.
All right.
Thank you, Danny, for sharing your insights with us and helping us look towards our future in a way that we can be more responsible.
I really want to also say that I love the work that you're doing. This podcast, I really, Dr. Red Shoe, I did not really know exactly what it was going to be. And I think you are spreading such good work.
Well, thank
and
you.
I love it. I love it.
I hope you're right. That's our goal.
And we should
we're only responsible for the legwork, not the outcome.
That's always true.
And
we should probably tell our listeners that
if you're wearing red shoes.
We should probably tell our listeners that we have received the Davy Award for Best Podcast Co-hosts.
We won the Silver Award for 2022. We did.
And I'm very impressed.
First time we're saying it publicly, right, Rabbi?
I think people have the right to know, Doctor.
I think so too. And we thank everyone who suffered through our early days when we knew even less of what we're doing. And hopefully we'll make a better and better job of it. So that'll be good.
And what's the last word today, Doctor?
Last word of the day is, all right, everyone out there who's got a relationship with money that is not as comfortable as it could be, just take a deep breath, remember you love yourself, and call someone like Danny Chandler and just start somewhere. Think baby steps. You don't have to do it all at once, but anyone who can breathe in and out and avoid money can breathe in and out and dive into money with little baby steps. So that is my thought. Be kind to yourselves and take care of your futures. So the rabbi and I wanted to say again, thank you, Danny. And all you listeners, good luck with your New Year's resolutions. This has been the Rabbi and the Shrink episode, and we look forward to seeing you at their next episode. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to The Rabbi and the Shrink, Everyday Ethics Unscripted. To book Dr. Redshoe, Dr. Margarita Gurry, or Rabbi Yonason Goldson as speakers or advisors for your organization, contact them at therabbiandtheshrink.com. This has been a Dr. Redshoe production.